time now for Outsiders. I'm Barry Cassidy and you're not.
Thank you, Uncle Barry. Your Outsiders team this morning is comprised of the following elements. Economist, lecturer at RMIT Business School, Sinclair Davidson, the Deputy Political Editor for The Guardian Australia, Catherine Murphy, and Managing Director of Market Economics, Stephen Koukoulas. Good morning to you all.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hello.
Elections. Who knew? Catherine Murphy, Tasmania, no real surprise. Maybe South Australia, no real surprise either.
Well, no, I think probably the collective expectation was that the Liberal Party may get a better result in South Australia than seems to be the case, although I caution there is a way to go with postals and pre-polls not counted.
Yes.
And negotiations with independents not yet had. That said, it's sort of interesting. I wasn't down there this time. I did go down and cover aspects of the South Australian election last time around. My observation, I suppose, on ground was that the Labor Party last time at least, because of course they prevailed in an election last time that they weren't supposed to win either, comprehensively outgunned the Liberals on the ground through some very brutal yet very effective marginal seats campaigning. And it will be interesting to see how this result washes out. But I'd stress you'd be mad to call it at this point.
It's story of that previous South Australian election, story of the western suburbs and the previous federal election, Sinclair, that capacity for the Labor Party to put a pretty good machine in place in the marginals.
Well, yes, it's winning government is about winning seats and not actually winning the overall vote. And everybody knows that game, and you should play that game. And I'm actually surprised that the Liberals have been more or less belted again by the same tactic that belted them last time. You would think that they would update their expectations and modify their strategies and learn from their previous experiences, which doesn't really seem to be in the case.
And Stephen Koukoulas, the punditry caught a little bit wrong-footed on this too, although taking, of course, Catherine's caution, but all this blue map talk of late last week seems a tad previous.
Is a bit premature, but it's still likely. And in a way, I've been thinking about what it would mean if we did have wall-to-wall blue states as well as the federal government in place.
Where did we get that terminology from, by the way?
This is
creeping cultural imperialism.
Coast to coast or whatever.
A new invention.
But the point being that it matters only when there's a big reform agenda that requires the cooperation of the states and the federal government anyway. And when I'm thinking about what is on the agenda or what could be on the agenda, all of the big things that would be enhanced if you've got the governments of the same persuasion in the states as well as federally are probably not being looked at. Things like GST changes and things which require the cooperation of the states, they're not on the agenda yet. So in a sense,
heaven forbid that we should talk about tax reform.
Oh gosh, sorry, but
who are you?
That's right, but it'll come onto the agenda one day,
well,
if not today.
The bigger we, I mean, there's something in that, isn't there, Stephen? I mean, the things that there's not that there aren't things that could be talked about in a more ambitious, cooperative, federalistic way. It's just that they're not.
Look, that's one of the disappointments of the last decade, I suppose, that we've got a wonderful economy at the moment. I think we're performing exceptionally well. We've had the boost from the terms of trade. Our living standards have never been higher. But the risks are that boost to our incomes is falling away as the terms of trade decline and some of the mining investment boom comes to an end. If we're to sustain this nice level of living standards that we've got, if we're to grow the economy for a 25th, 26th and 27th year and beyond, we need to start thinking about how we're going to pay for it, what sort of structure to the economy we need, and tinkering with carbon pricing and mining taxes and these sorts of things are just chicken feed when we do need to have a serious debate about how we're funding our aging population and how we and what industries and what sectors of the economy are going to be growing and whether the government should have any role in helping them to expand or not.
Perhaps we'll see the first nibbles of that conversation in the budget to come. And nibbling at that conversation too in the middle of the week was Ken Henry, who wore a wonderful tie for his 7:30 interview,
well,
might
and,
I say.
And the double-breasted suit. Was sorry very, for the
always
fashion
the double-breasted suit. With,
was
with
kind
Ken
of like
Henry.
A recoil, good grief. Is the double-breasted back, by the way, gentlemen?
There are words to that effect, though being
I don't
a
have
short
one.
And
the
plump
double-breasted
person,
never
know.
Went out, can I just say, just never.
I apologise, Jonathan, we digressed.
Yeah, it's legitimate, it's okay. Catherine Murphy there, joined by Stephen Koukoulas and Sinclair Davidson. There are your outsiders this morning on Sunday Extra. Here's a little bit of what Ken Henry had to say, and this is the bit that I wanted to dwell on for a moment, some observations about Treasury Secretary Martin Parkinson.
It's never happened in the Treasury in 114 years, 113 years. There have only been 16 Treasury Secretaries in that time. Martin is number 16. No government has ever thought it appropriate to remove the head of the Treasury and put in somebody who they think is of the right, let's say, of a more comfortable political character. Now, I'm not saying that is what has motivated the Prime Minister on this occasion.
And the Prime Minister, of course, subsequently was quizzed on this issue. This is what he said on Melbourne local radio, chatting with John Fain on Thursday.
I very much support the traditional Westminster concept of free and frank advice, frank and fearless advice from the public service. And Martin Parkinson has been an outstanding public servant, a very effective, very powerful head of Treasury. But we said when we came in that we did want to stamp our authority on particularly the economic agency.
Catherine Murphy, is there a whiff of inherent contradiction here? I fully support the notion of free and frank advice, but I'm going to stamp my authority on the key economic
agencies.
Except
when I get it. No, sorry, that's unfair. Well, there has been, as we're all aware, there has been a progression in Canberra towards governments beginning to appoint their own departmental heads on a more political basis, shall we say. I think that that trend in general horrifies institutional Canberra, and I think you saw some of that reaction in Ken Henry's horror at the treatment of Dr. Parkinson. And it is lovely how Treasury thinks that it withstands all trends. I think that's that's completely delightful. But anyway, in the case of Dr. Parkinson, of course, he's right. Dr. Parkinson has served both. Well, certainly the Howard government and then the Rudd and Gillard governments with distinction. He's a very fine public servant. In my view, he's been treated very shabbily by the incoming government.
And must be having a particularly jolly time right now under sentence of death, helping Joe Hockey with perhaps the most awkward budget in living memory. But tell me this, Sinclair. I mean, it's my sense about this system that having that sort of independence from the bureaucracy is one of our great strengths, to have an administration, an apparatus dealing with policy and ideas which straddles the political cycle is something that we should prize.
I think in principle as a fine theory, yes, that's a good idea. I think how Parkinson works now with Hockey is actually a mark of Dr. Parkinson, perhaps. He's by all accounts, he's doing a good job. I think a good minister would always want to receive frank and fearless advice, irrespective of where the person came from, because that's sort of going to lead to their longevity. But at the same time, I think the ideas of a nameless, faceless professional bureaucracy just going about its business are long gone. We're now in an era of celebrity bureaucrats. And I think if you're a government, you're going to want to have your own celebrity bureaucrats around the place as opposed to the other people's celebrity bureaucrats. So I think we're more into the Washington type scenario where a new government comes in and brings in all of its people. And I think that's where we're going. We've been going down that path for a while, and we're just seeing some of the more obvious and logical consequences of having gone down that path.
Then how, Stephen, can we have a sense of enduring policy objective and a sense of those objectives that are outside the political cycle if that's what happens?
That's the issue, and particularly in the case of Treasury and economics, many of the decisions in economics, and we're probably going to see that in the budget in a couple of months, involve people losing money, losing some of their entitlements when the government takes these tough decisions. And if you're not getting advice as the minister or the government or the cabinet on what are the consequences if we were, for example, to raise the pension age, if we were to have a $6 co-payment for Medicare, if we were to trim entitlements for aged people and all these other things, if you're not getting the full array of sound economic policy prescriptions from it, you're probably inclined to make a less good decision than you would if someone's just telling you, well, we can do this because, you know, we've got some marginal seats where it's probably not going to hit us too much or something like that. So the fair and frankless advice, I think, is very, very important. And it's up to the government to take it or leave it, of course, as we saw with the Henry tax review in 2010. You know, the previous government
pretty much left.
Took on about a quarter of the things. And all the bad things too. And left out some of the really good ideas that Ken Henry had in the Henry tax review of, 4 years ago. So, yeah, they can take it or leave it, but to have it on the agenda is really important for encouraging a better quality debate rather than just being fed the information that they want to hear.
Early indications, Catherine, that we have a government here which is not afraid to make changes which sort of trample on our sense of institutional certainty that they, you know, will be a bit iconoclastic.
Well, there's a couple of things here. Michelle Grattan wrote a quite interesting column through the week about, I sort of characterised it as Canberra's new tribes, and there is a certain amount of, I suppose, an atmosphere around the new government of being with us or against us. They're pretty aggressive political characters, and they play politics hard. And, of course, governments have got every right to frame and style themselves in the way they see fit. I suppose also I think we should add that there's no... obviously, the government hasn't made a stellar start in terms of opinion polling. That said, the sort of tribalism, there's no evidence to say that this strategy won't work for them. In terms of, I suppose, the desirability of that styling, I think it's a pity in a way, because it I suppose reinforces the hyper-polarisation around a lot of the discussion in public policy and national affairs at this point in time. And I think hyperpolarisation is not a good trend for the reality of good public policy, which is to set an agenda, have a discussion, have a dialogue, bring the voters with you, find some middle ground.
Good public policy is almost by definition found in the middle.
Well, it's a sort of artful consensus, I suppose. Look, as a political journalist, I obviously support the right of the new government to style itself however it sees fit. In terms of what it means for the discourse and what it means for public policy, well, possibly a little bit less fan dancing and a little bit more focus on what we need to do over this term and getting on with it, I think, is in order, rather than something I described, I think, earlier in the year as a bit of Seinfeld politics.
And just very quickly to close, Sinclair, I mean, governments can do what they will, but we would like to see some structures intact once they pass.
I think so, definitely. But bear in mind, we actually have elections every 3 years, and there's only so much institutional change that the electorate will put up with. And we've just seen the previous government thrown out after two terms, and we might see that again. So, you know, it's at the moment there's a lot of talk about style, and we've yet to see much substance, and it's still early days, and we'll see in 3 years' time if people have been taken along for the ride or not.
If only we could vote for government rather than politics, you see.
Well, if only we could throw them all out at the same time.
Thank you very much to our outsiders this morning. Catherine Murphy from The Guardian, from Market Economics, Stephen Kokoulis, and from RMIT School of Business, Sinclair Davidson.